we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. On Wednesday in Moscow, World Football's governing body FIFA will announce the host of the 2026 World Cup. The big announcement will come one day before the 2018 World Cup kicks off in the Russian capital. Morocco has been campaigning to become the second African country after South Africa in 2010 to win the hosting rights to football's premier event. The Moroccans are competing for the 2026 World Cup against a joint bid from the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Joining us now from Moscow is Stephen Goff, soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, my pleasure, Sonny.
On Wednesday, FIFA's 207 eligible voting members will cast their ballots for the host of the 2026 World Cup. Do you expect a close vote, Steve?
Yeah, I think it will be close. I think it's been close all along, and I think the results will show it. Morocco seemed to have the momentum over the last few months. That might have shifted in recent weeks after the inspection report came out. And, you know, these federations from around the world took a hard look at who should host the 2026 World Cup. Nonetheless, I think it'll be close and, could go either way.
I read your column in Tuesday's Washington Post, Steve, and you talked a little bit about how the voting process has changed since 2010. Can you tell our VOA listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, in the past, FIFA's executive committee, made up of 22 members, voted in secret in choosing a World Cup host. That has changed. In the aftermath of FIFA's corruption scandals and efforts to bring more transparency to the process, all the countries will vote. It's, everyone that's eligible, as you said, more than 200. Everyone has a equally weighted vote. And we will find out at some point after the final results come out, who voted for which candidate.
FIFA in the past, Steve, has been criticized for being less than transparent with these votes. Will it be different on Wednesday?
Yeah, no, we will find out shortly afterward who who, for instance, Germany voted for, who New Zealand voted for. It's supposed to all be out there. You know, it's not like they'll go down the list and people will, yell out their choice. But the final results should include specifics of the vote.
This is the fifth time Morocco has bid for the World Cup hosting rights. What has their platform been like, Steve?
They are trying to impress voters with the fact that, it's a modest size country in which people will be able to travel between cities without great distances. There is a certain soccer tradition and history there. It's certainly accommodating to European countries because of the time zone and the distance just across the Mediterranean. They've also pushed for, these modular stadiums, which will go up before the tournament, and many of which would be taken down. So it is a little bit different. But the problem Morocco faces is that this will be the first expanded World Cup with 48 teams, and it's just hard to picture a country of that size and the amount of infrastructure and stadiums that need to be built hosting 48 teams instead of 32 and 80 games instead of 64. So that's the challenge they face in this race.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Stephen Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve is in Moscow for World Cup coverage. And Steve, the Moroccans also have a team in Russia for the World Cup. What do you think of the chances of the Moroccans at the World Cup?
Not very good. You know, certainly a competitive team. But, you know, I think most people would be surprised if they were to advance out of group play. It's, you know, it's a tough group. They got Spain and Portugal plus Iran. You know, in all likelihood, Morocco will be eliminated after the group stage. But that's the joy of the World Cup and the joy of sport, to see how these competitions play out.
Another North African team, Steve, the Pharaohs of Egypt, their hopes hinging in large part on the health of Mohamed Salah, the star striker for Liverpool. Any updates on his fitness ahead of their first match?
Well, from what we're hearing, he's recovering well, but still, I believe, is listed as doubtful. We'll see. You know, the advantage here, perhaps, for Egypt is that the first game against Uruguay is their most difficult game, most likely in the group stage. So this is the one, if they can afford to lose a game, it's this one. You know, the games they need to win to advance, or not win, but draw, perhaps, are against Russia and Saudi Arabia. So if Salah's at full strength, full fitness, for the last two, I think they'll be pleased. But, you know, at the moment, it's a race against time to get him ready for the first game on Friday.
The World Cup officially kicks off on Thursday with a match between the host country, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. How is that one shaping up, Steve?
A lot of pressure on Russia. They're the host country. There's low expectation here. Russia has not performed well in recent months. They're, you know, I think at the moment they're probably the third team out of four in Group A, and the game against Saudi Arabia is a must-win. The Saudis are probably the fourth team in a four-team group, and if Russia wants to advance, they're going to have to win this game. You know, there's a lot of emotion involved in an opening game, certainly a lot of emotion playing at home. So I would imagine Russia rises to the occasion, and, you know, they should at least win this first match.
Do you get a sense, Steve, that the local Russians there are behind the Russian team?
I think so. I mean, it's their country, it's their team, but they're also realistic, and they see, you know, they see a team that is struggling, not highly regarded, lost some regulars to injury in the past few months. So, you know, I think if they can get out of group play and into the elimination round, they'll, you know, people will be, you know, somewhat satisfied.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Stephen Goff. Steve is the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. He's in Russia for World Cup coverage. Steve, ticket sales. The USA did not qualify for the World Cup. Big embarrassment for American soccer fans. But on the ticket sale front, I think the USA has reason to be proud. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this has been a trend in the last couple World Cups where ticket buyers from the United States have led the way in purchases after the host country. And in this one, there's close to 100,000 tickets have been bought by U.S. buyers. Now, that does not necessarily mean these are U.S. national team fans who just are coming to the World Cup anyway. These are people who live in the States and might support Mexico or Peru or Nigeria. They just happen to live in the United States. So numbers are down from 4 years ago because the U.S. team did not qualify. But nonetheless, there's a lot of people who live in the United States and have diverse interests will be here.
Steve, you mentioned the Nigeria team. Kind of a sidebar story. Their jersey, one of the hot sellers at the World Cup. Have you seen many Nigeria jerseys there in the Russian capital?
I haven't. I met some Nigerian fans today, but I didn't, they weren't wearing jerseys. So I imagine we'll see more of those as the tournament approaches and Nigeria's matches take place.
Finally, Steve, I know at previous World Cups, the noise factor can become a sidebar story. I remember you were there in South Africa in 2010 with the Vuvuzela. And what about these wooden spoons I'm reading about there in Russia? Are we going to be hearing those wooden spoons?
Yeah, I don't know much about that, to be honest. I'm curious to see what it looks and sounds like at the opening game and what they actually allow into the stadium. I mean, security is very, very tight around a World Cup, and especially a World Cup in Russia. So the sights and sounds of World Cup soccer change every 4 years, and I imagine we'll have something unique this time around.
Stephen Goff is the soccer writer for the Washington Post newspaper. Steve is talking with us from Moscow, the Russian capital. Steve, thanks for chatting with us, and enjoy the World Cup.
Yeah, my pleasure, Sonny. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. That song you just heard is called Live It Up, and it was chosen as the official song of the 2018 World Cup. The dance tune features Puerto Rican singer Nicky Jam, American Will Smith, and Era Estrefi, who describes herself as Albanian Kosovar. Washington Post soccer writer Stephen Goff mentioned how security is very, very tight in Moscow. On Tuesday, near the Russian capital, the Russians officially opened an International Police Cooperation Center. The 32 participating countries have sent officers to the World Cup to help Russian police spot troublemakers and prevent fans from having run-ins with local authorities. FIFA's German head of security, Helmut Spahn, spoke at the inauguration ceremony for the International Police Cooperation Center.
From my humble experience, the security standards, all the efforts made so far are outstanding, and I think we can expect a very fantastic World Cup, a safe and secure event for everybody, all the teams, all the spectators.
Also at the International Police Cooperation Center was Joseph Stocco, who is head of England's police delegation. He says English police officers are screening fans at airports in England before they travel to Russia.
The officers in the airports are there to identify any others who we think may be involved in trouble and stop them travelling to Russia as well. We've got that going on. And then here in Russia, we've got myself and my team on the road in all of the cities where England will be playing, working with the local Russian police and working with our supporters to ensure that if there's an outside chance of any troublemakers, we can engage with them and help them understand how to behave in Russia.
Joseph Stocco also says he's briefing Russian police on the behavior of English fans.
So I know how excitable and how much English fans can enjoy the occasion of drinking and singing and waving the flags. And I know I need to try and explain to my Russian colleagues that that isn't a precursor of anything more than England fans enjoying themselves before they go to the match. And I think that, to me, is one of the biggest parts of my role in this event.
That's Joseph Stocco, the head of England's police delegation at the International Police Cooperation Center near Moscow, Russia. And he spoke Tuesday at the inauguration of the facility, just 2 days before the World Cup kicks off in the Russian capital. Meanwhile, FIFA President Gianni Infantino says he's confident it will be a safe and secure World Cup in Russia.
The Russian authorities are very much aware about the security situation in such a big event. They are working very hard to prepare it. They are working very hard in cooperation with police forces and police authorities of all governments. So every fan that is coming to Russia will be welcomed in a safe environment to celebrate. If anyone is thinking to come to Russia to create trouble, well, then he better stay home.
That's Gianni Infantino, the president of World Football's governing body, FIFA. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. There's a celebratory atmosphere here in Washington on this 12th day of June. And joining us now to tell us why is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Welcome back, Gwen.
Thanks, Sonny. Hey, sports fans. Sonny and I are just down the street from what is arguably the biggest sports victory parade Washington, D.C. has ever seen to honor the Washington Capitals' first ever Stanley Cup win. Last week, the Caps won the Stanley Cup Finals against host Vegas Golden Knights in a 4-3 win in Game 5. After the win, joyous Caps fans spilled into the streets, chanted in jubilation, and turned the nation's capital red. It's been more than 26 years since this city has seen a celebration like the one planned for Tuesday. And for those who are having trouble getting out of work to attend the parade, the Capitals have come to the rescue. Posted on their official Twitter page reads the following: "To whom it may concern, please excuse fill in the blank from work today. Blah, 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 doctor stuff. She, he is definitely not at the parade. Nope, no need to check their social media. They are definitely sick or injured or both. Yep, sincerely, a real doctor. P.S. Hashtag all caps." Well, that's a lot of doctor slips, because over 100,000 cheering fans are expected to line the streets to welcome the Stanley Cup champions home. Go Caps! Okay, let's go from the Stanley Cup to the World Cup. 2 days until kickoff. Can you believe how close we are? And did you know only two men have won the World Cup as both player and coach? They are Mario Zagallo and Franz Beckenbauer. As a player, Brazilian Zagallo became world champion twice, first in 1958 and then in 1962. Then as coach, he triumphed again at Mexico 1970. Beckenbauer lifted the trophy for West Germany as team captain in 1974 and again as national team manager in 1990. And this year's tournament will mark the first time in history the ball throwers in a World Cup opening match will be all female. The girls are from Russia and aged 13 to 16, and they are soccer players themselves, so they're going to have to make a couple of adjustments. First, they have to remember to stay on the side and not the middle of the field, and second, they must remember to pass the ball by hand instead of kicking it. Their team coach says the girls sharing soccer's biggest stage is like a fairy tale. The World Cup kicks off on Thursday, and remember, tomorrow, FIFA officials will vote to decide which countries will host the World Cup in 2026. On one side, the U.S., Canada, and Mexico have cast a joint bid. On the other, a rival bid from Morocco. Stay tuned for that tomorrow. And that's all from me today. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Gwen talked about that big celebration here in Washington to honor the Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals. Well, I rode in on the Red Line train this morning. Red Line is one of the various lines of the Metro subway system, and it was only appropriate that I was on the Red Line because I saw a lot of red, the team color of the Washington Capitals, on that train, including more than a few Alex Ovechkin jerseys. Ovechkin, of course, the captain of the Washington Capitals. In pro boxing, unbeaten heavyweight champions Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua appear poised for a title unification bout. Wilder's trainer, Jay Diaz, says the two camps have agreed to terms on a fight in Britain later in 2018. Diaz says the big bout could take place anytime from September to November. Diaz says Joshua turned down a $50 million offer to fight here in the United States and that both fighters will make less than they would have to fight in Joshua's home country of the United Kingdom. Deontay Wilder is the World Boxing Council heavyweight champion, and he's won all 40 of his prize fights with 39 knockouts. Anthony Joshua holds the other main heavyweight belts, and AJ has won all 20 of his pro bouts with 20 knockouts. Meanwhile, former world heavyweight champion David the Haymaker Hay announced his retirement from boxing on Tuesday. Hay was beaten by Tony Ballou in May. The Haymaker also lost to Ballou in 2017. The 37-year-old Haymaker is retiring with a professional record of 28 wins and 4 defeats, with 26 of those wins by knockout. In a statement on his website, David Hay said, and I quote, "Today I announce my retirement from professional boxing. They say you can't play boxing, yet as I write this retirement statement and reflect on my time in the sport, I can't find a better way to describe the ride. This is not the end of my story," writes David Hay. "It's simply the start of something new." And another former world heavyweight champion, Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King, made a successful comeback in the ring over the weekend. Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King, defeated the Albanian heavyweight Sefer Seferi. Fury had been out of the ring for almost 30 months, 2.5 years. The bout was stopped after 4 rounds, lopsided bout. Fury said afterwards, "It felt fantastic to be back. I want to say thank you to the fans in Manchester, England." He goes, "I know Seferi was a tough guy, but his corner pulled him out of the fight." Next up for the Gypsy King Fury is another heavyweight fight scheduled for August 18th in Belfast, Ireland. No opponent has yet been named, but the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, with a successful comeback fight. And who knows, maybe down the road we'll see him in the ring against either Anthony Joshua or Deontay Wilder. And that wraps up the June 12th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the release of the 2017 International Religious Freedom Report, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called the report a testament to the United States' historic role in preserving and advocating for religious freedom around the world.
Religious freedom is in the American bloodstream. It's what brought the pilgrims here from England. Our founders understood it as our first freedom. That is why they articulate it so clearly in the First Amendment. As James Madison wrote years before he was president or Secretary of State, quote, conscience is the most sacred of all property, end of quote.
Religious freedom, said Secretary Pompeo, was vital to America's beginning. Defending it is critical to our future. Religious freedom belongs not only to Americans, but to every individual around the world. Furthermore, advancing liberty and religious freedom advances America's interests, declared Secretary Pompeo.
Where fundamental freedoms of religion, expression, press, and peaceful assembly are under attack, we find conflict, instability, and terrorism. On the other hand, governments and societies that champion these freedoms are more secure, stable, and peaceful.
The Trump national security strategy clearly states America's commitment to religious liberty. Our founders understood religious freedom not as the state's creation, but as a gift of God to every person and a fundamental right for a flourishing society. The release of the 2017 International Religious Freedom Report provides the status of religious freedom in nearly 200 countries and territories and documents reports of violations and abuses committed by governments, terrorist groups, and individuals. The world has made important strides, but much work remains to be done. In that regard, Secretary Pompeo announced that the United States will host the first ever Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom at the Department of State on July 25th and 26th of this year. The United States looks forward to identifying concrete ways to push back against persecution and ensure greater respect for religious freedom for all. The United States will not stand by as spectators, vowed Secretary Pompeo. We will get in the ring and stand in solidarity with every individual who seeks to enjoy their most fundamental of human rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopian lawmakers have lifted the controversial state of emergency imposed across the country 3 months ago. We'll examine the most significant reform so far by the country's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.